From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, January 14th. And I'm John Myers from KQED. And shocked at how long this week has been is Anthony York from the LA Times. I had to remind him that the budget was released this week.
This time warp is having a mildly hallucinatory effect. And so I'm really looking forward to this podcast.
There's all kinds of time warpy hallucinatory things going on around here.
Ooh, segue.
It was just barely a segue. Just barely.
That was solid. It was finessed.
Thanks. So, yeah, it's a long week. Long week with Governor Brown's budget being released on Monday. And now we're all sifting through it, and everyone's sifting and reacting and everything. First of all, we haven't said Governor Brown before on the podcast, so that's kind of new. No, actually, we did. Yeah, because he took the oath the week before. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we were still talking about Governor Schwarzenegger last week, too. So now he's pretty much on TMZ all the time, and we've moved on.
Yes.
So Jerry Brown's budget, $25 billion, pretty much splitting the baby, so to speak.
Yes.
Taxes and spending reductions, or reductions in expenses, which we'll have to, I'm sure, piece through here in a minute.
And tax extensions.
And tax extensions.
Here we go.
Here we go with the lingo. Another year and the same fights over verbiage. So so what do you think? What do you think this week? How do you make the week? I mean, I will just say, I'll start it off. I think it's been a pretty good week for Jerry Brown because I think he got a lot of credit for the budget proposal he put out, even when people didn't completely like it. I mean, when you have Republicans saying they give him credit for some parts of it, when you have Democrats biting their tongues about cuts that they absolutely hate, and when the governor, of course, gets some love from the opinion writers around the state for the way he put it out, the way he interacted with the public and the press.
So yeah, let's lead with the politics. We can talk policy for the for the people who want to suffer through the first 20 minutes.
Right, exactly. Policy will be just fast forward to 19 minutes
and 32 seconds. But you'll miss the cow noise, which you should rewind. So yeah, the politics. I think the tone of the opposition is worth noting. You know, I think that you're right. All of these negative press releases from the groups that you would expect to oppose $12 billion in taxes. The tone of those releases was what you said. It led with this sort of commend Governor Brown on his honesty, on the candor of his budget.
And then there's that paragraph that goes, that being said,
But we have an honest disagreement about ideas, right? And that would probably be an improvement in the discourse from what we've seen here in recent years. And I think that politically, that's what Brown is doing. I mean, how much of it is deliberate or just a byproduct of his style? I think he is, through a political lens here, positioning himself as the straight-talking salesman of this plan. And that's something that did not exist in 2009, right? Remember, Schwarzenegger wasn't in the ads. He had lost so much credibility that he couldn't even be the voice of the of those policies to the people. And I think going forward, I think Brown is going to try to, as much as possible, communicate directly with the people and say, hey, look, these are your choices. Whatever you want to do, I'm fine with. Here's my best idea. If you have other ideas, fine. If you don't like it, well, you know, it's going to look really ugly, but if that's what you want to do, we can do that too. And I think that's the conversation that Governor Brown wants to have with the voters of California.
I think you're right. And, you know, and not trying to get too far past the macro optics point of the podcast here for a moment. But that comparison to 2009, I mean, we're going to spend weeks here talking about the comparison to 2009, and everybody already saying, well, look, the voters already rejected them. Why would they do it again? Others say, well, they're apples and oranges questions, and on and on and on. And I can't sift through all of that yet, but I will say, right, one major difference is Arnold Schwarzenegger was not in the position that Jerry Brown was in politically or publicly at that point. That's not to say that Jerry Brown has 90% approval ratings.
He was elected with 54% of the vote.
But my point is, he's getting the benefit of the doubt from the public. He's likely to get the benefit of the doubt in the beginning. Schwarzenegger did. Yeah, but Schwarzenegger had the benefit of the doubt, though. Schwarzenegger was six years into his governorship. Poll numbers were down, had done lots of things that had kind of just split people out in all kinds of ways. And I think that's a major difference that can't be under
But I do I do think it's worthwhile to take a moment and look back to 2004. I mean, remember, Schwarzenegger had one move out of the gate. It was to go to the ballot. And he said later it was a move that he regretted. His choice was to borrow $15 billion instead of making the hard decisions. Now, you could defend, you know, he didn't anticipate the recession and all that and all the rest. But I think looking back, I mean, something that Brown has said, too, I don't want to borrow. We've already done that, you know, and so we're doing cuts. And we're going to do some taxes, or we're going to do cuts, and we're going to do more cuts. And those are our options. Now, you know, is that the truth? That's what the governor is saying.
Right.
And so, and we'll have to see how this plays out.
Interesting. And let's pivot a little bit. It's a mix of policy and politics. But when you look at the budget document, I mean, I can't help but think they're really, you know, not a tremendous number of things you can do in this environment, given how many things have already happened over the last few years, reductions and other kinds of things and gimmicks and tricks and whatever. But there are a lot of very clever little moves in this budget proposal that I think they're not bad policy choices, but they're very interesting political choices.
Right.
You know, for example, the fact that the tax revenue package is actually $14 billion, not $12 billion of revenues, but they're counting it as 12 because $2 billion of that would immediately go to schools, which brings the school component into this, which puts schools front and center in a June special election of you want to protect schools, deal with the taxes. That's clever, I think, in a way.
Right.
I also think it's interesting, too, that the realignment proposal, this restructuring of the local state government relationship, shifting about $6 billion worth of program expenditures to the locals, is also interesting with the tax package because it a lot of those taxes, the car tax part and the sales tax part, I think, right?
Sales and vehicles.
Earmarked for that local structuring.
Right.
So again, that sets up the, if you want the local programs approve the taxes. It also avoids the Prop 98 trigger of moving that money into schools. I mean, there's just a lot of very interesting moving parts here both policy-wise solve a $25 billion problem and politically seem to try to get Brown – seems to Brown and his team seem to be trying to give everybody skin in the game.
Well, let's – I think that's exactly what's going on. And let's talk about those things individually. I mean, the realignment proposal is an earmarking – money specifically for realignment, you know, or at least that's the way the governor presented it. That is meant to be sort of sweetener. That's meant to get the locals on board. Now, the problem is the locals need to support the plan. I mean, they're very skeptical of any promise from the state. And so if they
believe... Well, and locals aren't monolithic. There's counties, cities, and they're going to be split probably somewhat apart, too, by a lot of the Brown plan.
Right. Well, because a majority of the services Brown's talking about will be delivered by counties. And one of the big things targeted in Brown's budget, the redevelopment agencies receive $1.7 billion in taxes. Brown wants to do away with those redevelopment agencies, and those are largely functionally controlled by cities,
by and large.
So, but that there's going to be the need to flesh out the realignment proposal more, to actually get local support, to get that local skin in the game. I mean, if they don't take care of the locals' concerns, then I think one of the things that Brown is introducing to help sell the budget could be one of the things that's used to try to tear the plan down. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's a powerful double-edged sword, so to speak, right?
Yes.
That feels like a Conan reference, but we've already been there, done that in this.
The sword is gone.
In this lifetime, that sword has left the horseshoe in the state capitol. So the plan, has – and then I want to talk about the expenditure reductions, which again is a government term which we often shorthand into cuts. But as we had discussion with Republicans, they're not all spending cuts.
Right.
Some of them are program reductions. Some of them are ways to find money to pay for expenses from different ways, gas tax swap kinds of things and fund shifts. And there are not as many of those as there have been in previous budgets. But they do reduce the value of the $12.5 billion number down a few billion dollars.
Right.
Because, again, it's not that there are no program cuts. It's just a more complicated picture.
And here's just one example that might sort of drive that example home. The governor's budget, I believe, suggests a $1.7 billion reduction in Medi-Cal, right? At the same time, it also suggests, if memory serves, no notes here, $1 billion in fund shifts that the governor wants to put on the ballot, shifting $1 billion that is earmarked for childhood development programs under Proposition 10, the tobacco tax revenue. He wants to shift $1 billion of that to help offset the Medi-Cal cuts. So it's really a $700,000 reduction in Medi-Cal.
$700 million
reduction. And then it's really a $1 billion reduction in these programs that are being funded by the tobacco. So it's $1.7 billion worth of reductions, but on the governor's plan, it's scored as $2.7 billion.
And there's some criticism as to whether that's double counting
right there.
But again, that goes back to my larger point, too, of it being a very clever proposal in a lot of ways, politically and policy-wise. And clever could have been used as a pejorative in years past
creative.
But in this way, it again, I get back to this point of it feels like it brings a lot of people in. A lot of people have a lot riding on this.
And you have to. And I think that could expand a little bit before, you know, as we go forward here. You know, if a conversation about state employee pensions gets folded into this, that will expand the universe of those stakeholders and the people that have, as you said, that have skin in the game. It would also complicate things. I mean, we're on a very short time schedule here. The governor wants this done in 60 days. We're talking about a huge reordering of government under his plan, and extending billions in taxes. And this is something that that Brown wants to do quickly. And remember, I mean, we've got a new Assembly Republican leader. We've got a new Senate Republican leader, pretty new. I guess he's been around since December, right? November, December.
Right.
We have, and then we have a third of the Assembly that is brand new. I mean, we have a lot of new people over there, and Brown wants them to act quickly, and we'll see what the internal politics are. I'm sure we'll be talking about Republican votes for the proposal and whether or not they need 2/3. And these are things that I think we can introduce those concepts now, but they'll be our bread and butter here for the next 8 weeks.
Yeah, we need to introduce one of them about the voting, just because it gets to the tax issue and having an election. But just on the realignment thing, just for a moment, and again, not getting too far deep into it, but I mean, one of the things that is going to be really interesting to watch is that time frame. I mean, first of all, let's have an honesty moment for a second. There is no 60-day clock to this. I mean, the governor has said he wants about 60 days. He would like to have something in March so that it gives him a timeline to have a special election in June. But we have watched legislatures and governors in the past move those election deadlines around to suit their own needs, do things in shorter amounts of time, yada, yada, yada. So on March 1st, everything doesn't implode.
No, I think, there's no real deadline.
And there. I think that's a real careful thing. I mean, I do think there's a tendency in the press to kind of, you know, look for a date that we can wrap 15th, everything to.
The 15th, John. Beware the Ides of March.
Okay, well, that has historical references as well.
Shakespeare.
Which probably,
it's really, I think that's a Shakespeare creation. I don't think.
You don't think it went beyond that.
I don't know that Julius Caesar was really assassinated on the Ides of March.
That is a different podcast.
Yes.
but given that we are talking a smaller time frame than we talk about with budgets.
I thought we were talking about the historical Caesar, no?
No, we're not, but we'll get back to that.
Okay.
Given that we're talking about a smaller time frame than normal budgets, I mean, it is interesting to ponder this massive restructuring of local and state government.
There's no time to ponder, John.
and that's my point. The most successful and most broadly modified local-state relationship since Prop 13 was the realignment of 1991.
Yes.
That took them a very long time, months and months. They were working on it.
And how's that working out?
Well, a lot of people say actually there's a lot good out of the 91 realignment.
Certainly the legislative analysts said
that. The other one that'll point to, the 1988 trial court funding shift, where the state took over funding for that. Yes. That was worked on for a very long time. And those are the two that I keep hearing people talk about that were the biggest two up to date of this one. And I guess my point is we're sitting here looking at, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks. It's tough.
Right. But these are not new ideas. I mean, I think the argument against that, and I think some of what you'd hear, especially coming out of Daryl Steinberg's office, is some of these proposals have been vetted publicly for more than a year. that this conversation has been going on, that the person working on the realignment, Diane Cummins, is working in the Department of Finance now, was in Pete Wilson's finance shop during the 1991 realignment. And there
worked on the trial court funding one in 88.
And there are seasoned hands, you know, experienced hands at the helm here. And that yes, it's a quick timeline, but that, look, we're in the middle of a crisis. And that, you know, not to be too cliche about it, but I think there are some folks that see opportunities to get things done in the middle of an uncertain fiscal climate for the state.
When we talk about the politics of this, I want to talk about the taxes.
Okay.
Because that's the other part that we have to talk about this week. And, of course, the rest of it's going to play out. But so, you know, the governor wants to put these taxes. And, again, we referred to this a little while ago, the lingo, the verbiage here. They are
tax extensions.
They are kind of tax extensions. I mean, that, you know, then again, we get into a thing of like whether you really can extend them. But the point is, these are tax rates, income, sales, car taxes that were part of the 2009 budget deal. They sunset on June 30th. This would be extending them for 5 years after that.
Well, some of them have already expired, like the dependent credit expired in January.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. Well,
But that doesn't have to go on the ballot.
Expire.
Well, apparently not. Well, nothing has to go on the ballot.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, right. Putting car income, sales, and Prop 10 on the ballot, from what
that's something that Brown has said he would do. He's also changing corporate taxes with the single sales factor, eliminating tax credits for enterprise zones, changing the dependent credit, which those things will not be on the ballot.
Right. But let's go to the ballot part just for a moment. All of this gets wrapped
in. Are you sure about the dependent credit? Is that not going on the ballot?
I've been told, but we'll have to double check. Okay. And someone smarter will tell us.
Double check that.
I think I heard that from finance. But anyway, all of this gets to the two-thirds issue, to Republicans, and what are Republicans going to do? The ones you just laid out about the tax credits and all that, that's even a tougher road to hoe. But let's just play this one about whether putting the issue on the ballot constitutes supporting a tax increase. And that is the first big hurdle politically on that end of this, that that everything was fairly predictable, I think, this week, of what Republicans said. It violates their no new taxes pledge, and so forth. And
again, the tone. I think you listen to the tone.
Well, I listened to the tone, but at the same time, you wrote a story about people who've been nosing around with the public and polling about tax issues.
I did write a little something on that.
And the reason I bring that up when you would talk about it is because I do hear people say, if there's polling data that people believe, then maybe we have a different discussion. If there are members, if there are a few members in the legislature who think the public actually would be willing to do this, then they may soften their initial hard stance. But talk about what
you talked
about.
And this ties into your point about how this proposal was crafted. This proposal was crafted, and Brown said on Monday, he said that if these $12 billion in taxes are not extended, that there's limited opportunity to cut health and welfare programs. This is his read on it, and that the future cuts will, and that many of the additional $12 billion in cuts that would be required to balance the budget would have to come from schools and from prisons and from higher education, and those are things that are popular programs even with Republican voters. And so this is something, again, going back to 2009, Brown, in trying to frame this debate as a choice between, you know, a 1 cent sales tax and a 0.5% vehicle license fee, a choice between that, which you're already paying, and billions in cuts to schools, that if you frame the debate that way, that you might be able to get some support. Now, there was a public survey conducted by the PPIC back in May, the Public Policy Institute of California, that indicated that, and this was right, you know, this is a year after voters rejected sales tax increases, but that they would support tax increases if they were earmarked, if they would stave off cuts to education, right? So I think that politically, the Brown operation and the labor groups that are going to be supporting these taxes are consciously trying to frame the debate that way. That this is not about a general operating slush fund for Sacramento politicians. This is a choice between paying what you know you're already paying, and massive cuts to public schools.
And this first week has seen some things that are both symbolic and important and not even completely chump change. And I go to the cell phone thing.
Right.
If you didn't follow that this week, the governor said as many as half of all the cell phones that state employees have, he wants them back by June 1st. And it would save in an entire fiscal year $20 million,
right.
Which when you look at some of the cuts in this thing and something like Vision for Healthy Families for Kids is like an $11 million savings.
Right.
I mean, so that's where you get to see it's real money. But again, this gets to that public perception, which I think is so important. That's the feeling. If the public sees you're right. doing other
you're
things
you're getting
first,
your own house in order.
Yeah.
I mean, Brown, it's no accident that before the budget was unveiled on Friday, you know, the budget was unveiled on Monday. The Friday before, Brown announced a 25% reduction in the spending of the governor's office.
Abolishment of the Secretary of Education position,
right.
his cabinet secretary.
Right, yeah. right. A whole layer of senior staff has been eliminated. And those things are important. Important gestures, signs of goodwill that Brown hopes will help rebuild some of the trust between the governor's office or Sacramento, perhaps, and voters.
And the interesting, the only other thing I'd say on this, and we can wrap up because we got a lot more
too
to
much.
See what's going to happen
yes.
on this. And this should be an overview of what all of these things are at this point.
Right.
But you can't help but feeling that. And this is going to sound as though I'm I think a lot of people are going to be very careful to watch how the press covers Brown.
Yes.
I think there's already a sense that we love Jerry Brown, at least compared to Arnold Schwarzenegger. And we could debate that. And some of that is a new governor. That's why you get a new benefit of the doubt. He took 40 minutes of questions at the press conference. Arnold would have taken 7 minutes and walked out the door.
He's been walking the hallways.
He's walking the hallways.
Accessible.
He's accessible. But all of that aside, yeah. Again, I'm trying to like make sure that people don't think, we all love Jerry. But I will say that Brown seems especially well-suited to make the case he's making about austerity and thriftiness and all of these things. I mean, you talk to people who know Jerry Brown. You know this story well, Anthony. This is not an act. This is who Jerry Brown is.
Yeah,
Jerry
absolutely.
Brown is a pretty thrifty kind of guy. I mean,
yeah.
And so this is not something he has to pretend to do. And this is something that Arnold Schwarzenegger could have never done. As a Hollywood celebrity with the trappings of Hollywood.
It wasn't his worldview.
It wasn't his worldview.
And it wasn't his
style. This is the Brown worldview. It's not to say Brown's a pauper. He's not.
No.
But he is – this is part of who he really is. And as a result, I think it's easier, A, for him to sell it, B, for the public probably to see it.
Right. And it builds credibility going forward. I mean, I think this is a shift now. We all feel it, especially those of us who are here covering it. We feel the shift in administration. Whether or not we're all in love with Brown. Oh, look, it's new. It's like the first day of school.
Right.
It's exciting.
Right.
I don't think that's...
First date.
That's not deniable. Yeah. There's still plenty of time for this relationship to go horribly wrong. Let's just hope no kids are involved.
Exit.
Yeah. So that's all I got.
You ended on such a strange note. I had nowhere to come out of that. Well, that's an overview. I mean, there will be a lot to do here, a lot to do in a short amount of time. Budget hearings going on here at the end of the week, assembling Senate budget committees, getting their first look and questions in, anti-tax groups railing here on Thursday about the taxes issue. Brown has a lot of work to do, I think, on the tax issue with Republicans in the building. We're going to get into all these machinations about do you need a two-thirds vote? Can you go around the two-thirds vote? And da-da-da-da-da-da. But clearly the governor wants to go down that path of two-thirds consensus bipartisan agreement.
Right.
That's what he wants to do. No one is saying that's all that he'll do.
He understands that if this is seen as another byproduct of the partisan wars in Sacramento, it's going to impair his ability to sell it to voters. He gets that.
And I think we haven't heard interest groups weigh in completely yet. And I refer to the big interest groups. Organized labor, again, bit their tongue a little bit about some of the cuts. Teachers seem to be, they understand what's going on here. The business community is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean,
yes.
you and I both saw the statement out of the Chamber of Commerce after the governor put out his budget, which was we applaud him for working hard. And it didn't even have the but, that
right,
being
right,
said part.
Right, right.
And they are holding their fire. Probably they need to make good with Jerry Brown after a campaign that they backed Meg Whitman.
Yes, that's a previous podcast.
But these are all very fascinating dynamics of the political way this is going to play out with the interest groups, because
interest groups
dominate the process here.
And we will definitely get there. If not, in the podcast leading up to March, and then certainly if and when we have a campaign, we
will
be talking.
We're going to keep doing podcasts all the
this.
Way there, all the way to March.
Lord willing.
Lord. And there you have it. A nice way to end. That's Anthony York from the LA Times. I'm John Myers from KQED. As always, folks, thanks for listening.